I'm Sylvia Burgos Toffness, and this is Deep Roots Radio. Every week, my guests help us connect the dots between what we eat and how it's grown, because every single food dollar we spend either protects or degrades the environment, produces foods with high nutrition or empty calories, and either helps pay a fair wage or keeps farm workers among the working poor. We get to make that choice every time we push a cart through the grocery store, visit the farmer's market, and eat at a restaurant. I hope you enjoy this interview. Ah, fats. It's the sizzle in your steak and that wonderful flavor in your croissant. It's what makes French fries crispy. And that salad worth eating. Well, in part one of our basic discussion on fats and oils, we took a look at the basic difference between those two, and we had a chance to really examine butter. Before taking a look at pork and beef and poultry fats, as well as olive oil and soybean, let's have a quick review. Again, fats are lipids, a type of acid that doesn't dissolve in water. And these fats come from either animals or seeds or nuts. Fats are solid if they're mostly unsaturated fats, like butter and lard. And oils are liquid because they're made up mostly of unsaturated fatty acids. So, you know, if you take a look at your pantry, what have you got there? Well, you got corn oil, you got soybean oil, maybe safflower oil, canola, and maybe peanut oil. All fats and oils are a combination of both saturated and unsaturated fatty acids. There's nothing that's pure one or the other. So, what's the difference between a saturated fat and an unsaturated fat? Well, that's a little chemistry, but I think if you were to take out a pen and paper, you'd be able to follow this pretty well. Using your pen or pencil and paper, make a chain with out of links. Okay, those are your carbon atoms. Now, the carbon atoms in fatty acids have hydrogen atoms associated with each link. Some carbon chains are long and some are short, and the short and medium chained fatty acids are quickly metabolized in our bodies. That means we use them up right away. On the other hand, our bodies tend to store the long chained fatty acids. So, if each link in the carbon chain has a complete pair of hydrogen atoms attached to it, it's a saturated fat. It's all used up. These fats are firm at room temperature and very stable. They tend not to go rancid very easily, and they include beef and lamb fat. They're less vulnerable to heat and oxygen. Now, if the chain is missing one pair of hydrogen atoms, you've got a monounsaturated fat. These are softer than the fully saturated ones, but almost as stable. They're found in both beef and pork fats. Now, if the chain is missing two or more pairs of hydrogen atoms, it's a polyunsaturated fat, and this is liquid at room temperature, which makes them really fragile, and they're likely to turn rancid more quickly. Now, what about this thing we've heard about called trans fats? Well, when a liquid, oil, when people want to make it more shelf stable, they add hydrogen to it, and that makes it solid. And up until the 20th century, there was only one trans fat that humans ever came in contact with and ate, and that was one called conjugated linoleic acid, also called CLA. And those are actually healthful acids found in butter and fats from ruminants. So that's cows and sheep and goats. And if you live in other parts of the world, you're getting your CLAs from camels, yaks, buffalo, and deer. Now, those CLAs are credited with fighting cancer and preventing weight gain and heart disease. And again, they're found only in those animals that are 100% grass-fed. All right then, now what about this thing called omega-3s and omega-6s? Well, those are special kind of fatty acids. And the name, the three or the six, comes from where the hydrogen is missing on that chain of carbon atoms. The omega-3s have a missing pair of hydrogen atoms three links up from the end of the chain. Omega-6s have no hydrogen atoms attached to the sixth link of that chain. Now, what's the big deal about omega-6s? It's really about the relationship of omega-6s to omega-3s. And the ideal ratio is two of the six to each of the threes. But today, because we've replaced animal fats with vegetable oils, we're now eating 20 times or maybe even greater multiples more omega-6s than omega-3s. Again, when you take a look at grass-fed animals, they're the ones that are able to give you more of those omega-3s. Now, an excess of omega-6s? Well, some of that research is making some connections between the excess of omega-6s and cancer, heart disease, liver damage, learning disorders and weight gain, and malfunctions of the immune system. And about cholesterol? Well, the first thing to know is that it's not a fat. In fact, it's a type of alcohol found in all animal protein. Our cell membranes and much of our brains are made of cholesterol. And cholesterol is really important in order for our vital organs to work. And our bodies use cholesterol to repair themselves. In fact, one of the things that we are learning now is that low cholesterol levels are associated or have been associated in some studies with depression, certain diseases, and an increased risk of infection. One of my earliest and most favorite food memories was at my grandmother's table. She'd make up dinner, rice and beans, and very often a just luscious pork chop. Not those inch and a half thick ones that you tend to see today, but something that was fairly thin, fairly lean. Ours was a pretty modest household. But oh my goodness, the garlic and the salt and the pepper that she'd rub not only into the meat, but into that fat that encircled that chop. I loved that fat. In fact, it was the first thing I went for. Well, fear of fat is pretty much made most of us really guilty about that kind of simple pleasure. But we're finding out that lard is good for us. But lard isn't the only kind of fat found on a pig. They've got back fat, belly fat, cowl fat, and not only regular lard, but a thing called leaf lard. Well, back in 1950, we as Americans consumed almost 13 pounds of fat per person per year. Roll that forward to 1995 and we were down to under half a pound. Interestingly, our concern for trans fats has eclipsed that of lard, and now consumption of pork fats of different kinds is backed up to 1.5 pounds in 2005. Now, because pork fat is low in polyunsaturated fats, it doesn't turn rancid easily and is very stable when heated. In fact, it's got a smoke point of 400 degrees. What does that mean? It means that it won't start to smoke. It won't start to kind of put those bitter smells and flavors into the fat until it reaches 400 degrees. And that's really important because best kind of temperature for deep fat frying is 375 and above. And so you want a fat that's able to take that kind of temperature. And another interesting thing about fried foods is that they absorb less fat than foods that are fried in vegetable oils. This also makes them really crisp. And interestingly enough, pork fats tend not to have a lot of flavors or smells, especially if you get those really good organically produced, sustainably produced animal fats. Fats from pork as well as from beef can be reused, but if you're going to do that, you need to let it cool, filter it so that you're taking out most of those little bits from there, and then refrigerate it. And you might also think of using it only 3 times, because every time you take a fat up to its smoking temperature, it begins to degrade, and the smoking temperature actually begins to lower. Now, what's the big deal about a degrading fat or reaching the smoking point? Well, at that point, it starts to produce free radicals, something we don't want in our systems. And also the very nature of that fat begins to produce compounds that add an acrid taste to the fat. And if you use that fat, it's going to add it to your food. So about those 4 types of pork fat. Well, there's back fat, and that's the fat that's right under the skin of the back, the shoulder, and the rump. And that fat is ideal for wrapping around lean cuts of meat to prevent them from drying out. Think about here we live in the upper Midwest, where we've got a good hunting tradition. Lots of those game meats are very low in fat, and they're very prone to drying out when cooked. So if you wrap some of those meats in some of this fat, you not only get good flavor, but you'll also get a more moist dish out of that. Then we've got belly fat. Now that's both firm and soft fats layered with meats, and that's where we get our streaky bacon from. Now you can also cure this kind of fat to make salt pork. And salt pork is really, really good when you're making bean casseroles and other types of slow-cooked things in the oven. Leaf lard. Now, that is the queen of fats. And that's the kind of fat that's around the pig's kidneys. What makes it so amazing, it's got a very brittle crystalline structure. And that makes it ideal and really sought after for making pastries. It is the best pork fat. Now, when you're searching for lard, be careful of what you buy and take a look at the package labeling. Talk to your butcher, because even some of the lards that we find now in stores have been hydrogenated to extend their shelf life. In other words, they've taken a good thing and made it a whole lot less than good. So talk to your butcher about that. Okay, cowl fat. Now, this is one that most of us don't come across. That's spelled C-A-U-L, caul fat. And it's a lacy membrane of fat that encases the pig's intestines. It resembles a spidery web, and we use it for wrapping around lean meats as well. Lard has again become my go-to fat for biscuits and pie crusts, and streaky bacon is the foundation for most of my casseroles. What great flavor. Chicken fat, schmaltz. Boy, this is a fat I've really gotten reacquainted with just in this past year as I've been making chicken broths and chicken bone broths, and that marvelous fat rises to the surface as that broth cools. I've begun to collect it and use it and have really wondered, man, what have I been throwing away over these past years? All poultry fats, and that includes ducks, turkeys, and geese, as well as chickens, contain monounsaturated fat that's believed to be good for our immune system. Hey, and so that whole idea of chicken soup being good for you plays out. Now, This fat is fairly soft at room temperature and melts easily. It's also low in polyunsaturated fats, so it's very stable at high heats and good for frying. Duck fat, in fact, is a really good substitute for lard. It's also good for a thing called potted meats. Now, I think this is something that if you're someone who's really tried to stay on a low-fat diet, you might hear this and think, oh man, I'm never going to do that, but it is so delicious. Okay, here's the quick recipe. For every pound of leftover meat, take a half pound of poultry fat, lard, or butter. Dice the meat and combine it in a food processor with the fat. Spin it. Process it with salt and pepper and maybe wine or brandy. And do this until you've got a fairly smooth product. Pack that product into a small glass or ceramic container and then seal it with another layer of fat. It will keep for up to 2 weeks in the fridge. Bring it to room temperature when you want to serve it with toast or crackers. Now, this is something that's pretty familiar in England, fairly unknown here in the United States. It really, really tastes good. You can also use chilled or frozen poultry fats for making your biscuits. Suet, you know, that tannish block of fat that we put outside for the birds in the winter. Well, if that's all we're doing with suet, we are losing out on an awful lot, because that beef fat is great for using in biscuits, pie crusts, and for deep fat frying. In fact, it's what put the crisp, great flavor in McDonald's fries when they first started making them years and years ago. In general, there are two kinds of fat that you can get from a cow or even from a lamb. There's the fat that's just below the skin, and then there's the fat that's internal to the meat itself, the marbling. That marbling bastes the meat as it cooks or roasts. It keeps it moist and it just imparts wonderful flavor. The external fat, the fat that's just below the skin, helps to protect the meat from bacteria as it's hung and aged at the butcher shop. Now, the amount of beef on any, rather the amount of fat on any cow or sheep has declined over the years as our fear of fat has grown. And because it takes longer to grow out a well-conditioned animal. And by well-conditioned, I mean an animal that has the right amounts of fats, not only under its skin, but within its body. Suet is the kind of fat that develops around the kidneys. Suet is firm and brittle and has a high melting temperature. Now, you also find fat in the bones, especially in the leg bones. That's the marrow. The marrow is just delicious, and it's mainly monounsaturated. It contains iron and phosphorus, vitamin A, and trace amounts of thiamine and niacin. The suet, as I said before, is great for deep frying and for pastry. It makes really fluffy dumplings. And there's no need to render suet. In other words, you don't have to melt it down and clarify it in order to use it. You can shred it using a box grater, or you can use your food processor for that. Then there are the drippings that come when you make a roast or when you make a bone broth. Oh my gosh. Again, I think about all the fat that I've thrown away over the years, and I lost a treasure. But I'm gathering those things up now. And those drippings really add another flavor when you're browning beef. You can easily store it in the fridge. And if you want to really hold on to that fat for a longer period of time, clarify it, which is an easy thing to do. Let's say you've made a roast and you've got all those brown drippings at the bottom of your casserole. Well, you let them cool and then you lift that fat out of the pan. You can then actually refine it even further by remelting it in another pot and then sending that through muslin or through cheesecloth. You will get a product that adds just a hint of flavor and really is a terrific substance with which to work. Well, we go from our animal fats now to the oils. And oils are extracted from seeds and nuts, usually through crushing or pressing. When you're kind of taking a look at the oils in your pantry, you want to kind of figure out whether or not you've got unrefined oils or refined oils, because that really affects their smoking point, how you can use them for frying. Unrefined oils, which are often also called virgin oils, contain lots of minerals and enzymes and other compounds that make them taste great, but which also makes them become rancid more quickly and lowers their smoking point. For example, the smoking point of extra virgin olive oil is 325 degrees Fahrenheit. Once you refine that oil, its smoking point goes up to 465 degrees, which makes it more suitable for higher temperature frying. Other fats that are really good for frying are peanut oil, safflower oil, soybean, and sunflower oil. Each one of those has a smoking point of 450 degrees Fahrenheit. And again, why is that important? Because once you reach the smoking point, you begin to produce compounds within that oil that make your food and the air smell bitter and acrid. It also releases free radicals, and you begin to approach the flash point of your oil. What's that? That's when it begins to emit gases that can catch fire. Not anything you want to do. And so if you have an oil that you really love the flavor of, think of not using it in frying or using it with other kinds of really high heat, because you want to preserve the full flavor of that oil. Are you using the best fat or oil in your cooking and baking, deep frying, or for your salads? Man, we've got a lot to choose from, but not all fats are good for every dish or for every cooking method. The ones that are solid at room temperature take considerably longer to become rancid, and they tend to have higher smoking temperatures. And the liquid ones can be good candidates for deep frying, but remember that the unrefined or virgin oils may smoke at considerably lower temperatures. Also think about the omega-3s versus omega-6s. You'll probably find some information on your fats packaging. And when it comes to cholesterol, well, again, the research is now showing that there never has been very much data that makes a causal relationship between cholesterol, animal fats, and heart disease. So have fun in your kitchen. Pull out your lard and your butter, olive oil, and canola. Rediscover the flavor and healthfulness of beef and schmaltz. Now, some of the websites that might help, if in case you want to know more and are willing to delve into that question of good fats, bad fats, are SeriousEats.com, the Weston Price Foundation. They've got an awfully good website, very, very informative. The USDA, Mother Earth News, Guide to Healthy Fat. And you may want to take a look at a New York Times post from March 17th, 2014. It refers to a study that knocks holes in that assertion of that tie between the animal fats, cholesterol, and heart disease. My husband Dave and I, our Bolingo beef cattle, and our three dogs wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Visit my website, bronxtobarn.com, to download this and past interviews, to learn about my farm, and to reserve 100% grass-fed beef. We deliver to Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. Thanks.